Support for the Projection Booth podcast comes from Stitcher Smart Radio. Now podcast listeners can access the latest episodes of the Projection Booth and thousands of other podcasts on the go without downloading or syncing. Stitcher instantly delivers episodes of your favorite shows to your mobile phone. Stitcher Smart Radio can be found in the iPhone or Android app stores or on the web at stitcher.com/booth.
What you want to hear? All the funk in the house. Chicken pot, chicken pot. What you want to hear? All the funk in the house. The funky chicken pot.
Come on, come on.
Well, the chicken pot, yes, 7 foot tall, 240 pounds and we're made to crawl. We're here in the pot, just in case you didn't know. We want to make sure that you have a good crawl. You know what we do to people ain't fine. We take them to the barn and we make them whine. Chicken pot is what we say. Chicken pot, we'll scream all day. Many of you are close friends of ours, so they want to protect you with all of their hours. Chicken pot, come on, come on. Chicken pot, sing our song.
Here we go on the barn. I like that.
All right, come on. It's happening, I love it. It's happening, I love it. It's happening, I love it. What's happening to me, man?
Welcome to another episode of the Projection Booth. I'm Mike White. Joining me this week is writer, raconteur, and celebrity chef Mike Sullivan.
Hey, yeah, what I think is funny about that is, like, all that is a lie. There's nothing you said about me that's true, actually, especially writer.
Well, what about your name?
That's true-ish, yeah.
Okay. This week we're looking at the Clucktastic 1996 film Chicken Park, directed and starring Italian superstar Jerry Calà. Chicken Park is a bizarre attempt at parodying Steven Spielberg's Jurassic Park and maybe a couple dozen other odd films. Jerry plays Vladimiro, a cockfighter who brings his prize bird to the Dominican Republic. When his cock is stolen, he traces it to the titular Chicken Park, where the fiendish Dr. Eggs has hatched a plot to, well, make giant chickens or something, I guess. I've watched this film a few times now, and it actually seems to make less sense each time I see it. So you got to tell me, Mike, what drew you to this clucking film?
Do you remember Witching Hour Video?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I think this is the first company to offer it. I think there was really wasn't that many companies that offered this movie. Well, it said it was like one of the worst movies ever made, but what I really noticed was that they said it was a Jurassic Park parody, and that's what really caught my attention. And like a couple years later, I watched it, and it just took me by surprise just how bad it was. It just was the kind of like bad that just impressed me. Like, it just took me by surprise. It was like a perfect storm of shit. It was like so wonderfully awful. I was amazed by it. I'm still amazed by it. I've seen like terrible parody movies. Parody movies and like comedies in general fail. At least you can see where they were trying to be funny. You know, you can see where the joke might be. Like Chicken Park, there was nothing, there's clearly no indication of what might be funny or why they thought this would be funny, and that's why it's just such an amazing movie to me. Like, everything fails in, like, this very spectacular, surreal way.
The thing that gets me is that it's called Chicken Park. It starts off with, you know, the workers making the Chicken Park entrance, which I guess is very important for them to do, and, you know, setting up this really awful dubbing, and which is strange because the rest of the movie doesn't feel as badly dubbed as the opening does. But man, that opening just really, it gets you where it hurts the most. Then after that, it's like what? Like half hour, 45 minutes before they even get back to the Jurassic Park parody stuff again. It's like Jerry on the plane, which makes no sense to me that like half of the passengers are ghosts and vampires and skeletons and this kind of stuff. I'm not getting what that's trying to say. And then the other half of the plane is apparently normal people, except for the invisible man that Jerry's sitting next to, where Jerry gets to unload the entire plot of what's going on, his motivation, land in the Dominican Republic, and you get that just out of nowhere Deer Hunter parody.
Why did they think that was, like, the idea behind, like, that Deer Hunter parody? Why would they think that would work? That is just like, this is what this thing is. It's like a comedy written by, like, the mentally ill, and like some sort of, like, therapy project. Like, the whole idea where it's like, you know what, let's make fun of, like, the Russian roulette sequence from, like, Deer Hunter, but let's not use guns. That's used too much. That makes too much sense. Why don't we just use, like, hand grenades filled with soda? But, like, one hand grenade is like a real hand grenade.
And it's a hand grenade that only kills the person that's holding it, apparently.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, everyone there is just like, yeah, let's watch this guy blow himself up. And that's just like the pre-show to the cockfighting, which is great, too.
They have, like, boxing gloves on, and that's, like, real cockfighting, because that's what you want to see in a comedy. Real, like, raw footage of cockfighting that would be, like, in something like Cannibal Holocaust, you know?
Poor Jerry's got all of his hopes and dreams pinned to his cock, and, I mean, they make a couple good cock jokes.
Yeah, then, like, they just, like, run out of semen and just, they don't know, it's like they, well, first of all, you know, they obviously they chose, like, you know, the cockfight and everything just for, you know, so they can use the word cock, you know, like, they could, like, shoehorn it in. But then it, like, loses steam. It's like, my cock is stolen, my cock, and it's like, you know, they just don't know what to do with the whole, like, cock joke anymore. They did the three jokes, and then they're like, well, how do we shoehorn this in another place? And then they just give up eventually.
It feels like there's just all these different roads that they're going down, and they just drop them. You know, they just pick up these things, and they're like, yeah, we'll parody this and just end it. You know, just like the I think one of my favorites is the footprint of the chicken, and a little yellow submarine comes up, and I'm like, okay, is that supposed to be a Beatles reference? And then, like, a little Jaws fin comes up, like a 2-inch Jaws fin is chasing around the yellow submarine. I'm like, oh, wow.
It's like, if you think, like, Friedberg and Seltzer are bad with, like, the comedy recognition, I mean, they're, like, not even trying. They're just, like, picking, like, pop culture things at random and just opening, like, just by mentioning, they'll get a laugh. Like, when Sherlock Holmes just shows up and he's like, he goes, are you Italian? And, like, Jerry Kelly goes, yes, you notice anywhere. And that's, like, that's the joke. That's what they thought would be funny. Just someone points out that someone else is Italian.
I think the most interesting character for me in the whole film, though, is Dr. Eggs. He is just really astounding to me. I mean, the guy's, what, like, 4'10", maybe? And he's got that amazing squeaky voice.
Yeah, I like that guy, too. Yeah, I genuinely like that guy, yeah.
But he doesn't really feel too comfortable with the material sometimes. It feels like he's really kind of struggling to get through his lines.
Yeah, that's so true. I don't know who that guy is. I like, the one thing I know is, like, IMDb says he went on to produce, like, the Diane Lane movie Unfaithful. I don't know if that's true or not. And then apparently he did some, like, I guess some, like, bit parts in Dick Tracy. So I don't know what this guy's story is, but, man, I wish I could find out more about
Lawrence Stephen Myers.
Lawrence Stephen Myers. I don't know what his story is, but, man, I wish I could find out more about that guy. He just seems, like, fascinating. He just, like, somehow showed up in this movie. He's not really too happy. It's like he's doing it under Juris, you know?
Right. And he's got those two muscly bodyguards that he can't really stand, but yet he seems very comfortable to be around these two very over-muscled bodyguards.
And they've got, like, the funniest, they must have spent, like, hours coming up with the names for these two guys. What were they called? Jelly and Beans? Oh, man.
Is it poisonous?
No. I'll tell you what it is. It's crotch crap. 100 million years old.
Do they look a day over 40?
It came to us encapsulized in fossilized amber. Isn't that so, Dr. Sigourney?
100 million years ago, well before the dinosaurs, there were roosters and hens. And like the dinosaurs, they were enormous. But you know what their favorite pastime was? Sex.
Birds of a feather flock together.
Yes, and they flock like it was going out of style.
And so, as can be expected, a few caught the crabs. Crabs, which got caught and hermetically preserved in tree sap, delivering to us intact the DNA molecules of the long-lost host. The gigantic chickens.
Unbelievable.
Dr. Sigourney here deserves all the credit for discovering the cloning process.
Thank you.
Well, I merely provided the means and wherewithal to make this great dream come true.
And then all of a sudden we find out that Dr. Eggs is probably heterosexual when you introduce his amazingly interesting looking girlfriend, necrophilia.
How do you make fun? You can't really make fun of the Addams Family. How do you make like the Addams Family more outrageous? And that's like something they try to do in it. You can't take the Addams Family any further, but they do try. This is easily, I think, it's the most memorable scene. This is what you're going to take away. This is like the one scene you're going to take away from the movie. And usually this is like a selling point for like a lot of people when I say this, because they got to be like, oh, I got to see this. You know, this is in there. And I think you know what I'm talking about. There's a scene in it, and I don't know what they're trying to do with this. I don't know who thought this was funny. And this like just like only solidifies that they were mentally ill, the people that wrote this. There's a scene in it where like necrophilia, you know, like the Morticia stand-in, like she like retreats to like this hidden room, and she puts in like this videotape of botched surgery footage. And she like sits down, and you know, and she calls in like Thing, like there's like their version of Thing. I can't remember what it's called, like Stinky Thing or something stupid. And she just like claps, and it comes over, and it just starts like finger banging her to like this like footage of like botched surgery. And it's like, who would find this funny? Who is this for? This is a crazy scene. And this was like, this is supposed to be an economy, and this is what they have in it. It's like the most like screwed up. It's like something, you know, like serial killers would maybe find funny, you know? But even then, I'd be like, oh, I don't know, that's too weird. You know, it's just like, it's this bad, bad idea that's here. And the movie's just full of things like that.
I thought you were going to say the scene of Bruce, the guy who's dressed kind of like a sailor, who's being pinned up like the goat and dancing. I mean, that's quite a dance. To me, that was the most memorable moment of the film for me. It was just him dancing around. The homophobic jokes in this movie are just, they really add that extra level of bad taste to it.
It's like really racist too, because like pretty much like every black person in it is either like beaten or like involved in a gang rape or break dancing in the middle of like a war zone. It's just like it just really hates people, this movie. It just hates everybody.
Even Jerry. I don't even think that Jerry is liked in this film. I don't even know how you can describe this guy.
Here's how I would describe him. I've said this before. He looks like a cross between Paul Sorvino and like a tote bag filled with like rice pudding.
And that kind of describes his personality as well.
And you could tell he was a director, because like in every scene he's in, like women just like, they just like, yeah, they basically like every time they're on screen, when they see Jerry Calla, they're basically dry humping him.
Oh,
like
yeah.
They just can't control themselves because he's so sexy, this guy. And it's just like, and like every woman, doesn't matter who, they're just on screen and they're like all over him. And it's just, it's like, again, is this like funny or is this like, you know, like a weird part of your like egotism, you know, like why is this happening?
Right, right. Which brings us to the one of several moments of self-reflexivity in the film where because he's got like two or three different women that show up that I think, okay, this is going to be the love interest. And then when you finally get to the Chicken Park sequence, and then I guess that is going to be the love interest in it. And he turns to the camera and is like, can we do better than this? And then it becomes this whole like him looking out in the audience and picking this quote unquote beautiful girl out of the audience and her coming up into the screen. But first she has to give this very heartfelt speech about, you know, wanting to leave her life and everything, which brings in this whole like, you know, last action hero kind of parody. And again, they do it better in Chicken Park than I think that they did it in Last Action Hero.
You sincerely think that?
Yeah, actually, yeah, I think it does. I think it makes more sense than Last Action Hero, and I think that it works better in this film as this kind of self-reflexive moment, even though it's interesting, though, that when she comes into the movie, she just immediately becomes the character, you know, once she changes out of her clothes and into the new outfit and everything, she just suddenly becomes Dr. Egg's assistant. Is that her character named Sigourney or something?
I don't know why. I guess it's like an aliens reference, but I don't really understand why it would be.
Yeah, I don't get that either. Oh, we should probably say, too, about one more thing about Necrophilia Addams is, I mean, that's a good name and all, but her real name is even better as a joke name, Rosie De Palma.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. It's weird. She's like an Al Modovar regular. Like, she's in like a lot of his films, like in bit roles.
She reminded me a lot of Hatchet Face from Crybaby.
You know, here's a weird thing. I actually think Hatchet Face is kind of attractive. Like, she has like a quality. I actually think that. I think she's got like a weird sort of like skanky beauty, like Hatchet Face.
But yeah, Rosie De Palma is just like, what is going on? I mean, she's very interesting looking, but she's definitely very, European looking. Put it politely that way, I guess.
She's like violently European looking. Like it actually hurts you, like looking at her. She's like so European.
Yeah. You were trying to say what can make the Addams Family funnier than it is suddenly making one of the kids mute, which makes no sense to me.
Yeah, but then it like switches at the end because that's even funnier.
Oh,
after they get electrocuted. Yeah,
and the electrocution scene is pretty good too.
Yeah, that reminds me, like that film, it really is homophobic because there's like a scene where those kids are just calling that giant chicken a fag.
Right.
Like just out of nowhere. I guess that was still the time when he could say that, you know? It was still like that weird sort of like, you know, we frown upon this, but I guess you can still say it.
Right.
You know, like one of those things. But yeah, I forgot that movie really is homophobic. Jeez.
Yeah. And now you can't even call a car gay, but yeah, in that one, they're just like, the chicken's got like the earring thing connecting it and the eyeshadow and trying to make love to Jerry. And that other chicken was trying to make love to Sigourney. It's like, what the hell? I think my other memorable part of the film is when Jerry comes into the park and he's just pissing on that tree for like 5-10 minutes, something like that. And it finally turns out that it was a chicken leg. I still don't even understand why Dr. Eggs was trying to make these giant chickens.
I think I know why. Remember that his mistress in the movie was like really super tall?
Oh, right.
I think he was like testing it on chickens to like, you know, am I defending the logic of Chicken Park? Oh, Christ. I'm defending the logic of Chicken Park. What's wrong with me?
Now that you say it, I do remember because she's got those like, she's just long. She's got those legs that are super long.
Yeah.
And I guess arms that are super long too, since she can scratch her ankle with it. But in no other way is she overly large. Yeah, I was kind of expecting like a, you know, Daryl Hannah in the Attack of the 50-Foot Woman kind of thing. But yeah, that was weird when they cut to her. He's got her, and then he's got necrophilia going on at the same time. Dr. Eggs, he's more man than most women can handle.
It's his raw sexuality. His, like, manly sexuality. They just can't take it. That manly lift.
Exactly. He looks like he should be wearing a mustache to kind of protect his upper lip there.
Like a pencil-thin mustache. Like a John Waters-type mustache, yeah.
That'd be even better, yeah. I was thinking, like, the bushy Freddie Mercury kind of thing, but...
Oh, that would work, too. Yeah.
All right, so we're going to go ahead and we're going to take a break here, and we'll be back for more Inside the Projection Booth.
GGTMC live for you, fresh air. Big Willie and the Samurai are at your service, breaking films down and turning them around, giving recommendations that are always on point. Visit ggtmc.com for more information. The Gentleman's Guide to Midnight Cinema, bringing class to the trash since 1977.
Everyone wants to spice things up in the bedroom. Here's an offer you won't want to miss. For a limited time, you'll get 50% off just about any one item at AdamandEve.com. Yes, get 50% off when you use the coupon code BOOTH at checkout, as in John Wilkes Powers or the Projection Booth. But that's not all. You'll also receive 3 free adult DVDs and free shipping on your entire order. Too good to be true? It's not. Check out AdamandEve.com today for this special offer. Once again, that coupon code is BOOTH at AdamandEve.com.
Ahoy, mateys. This is KAB, Antonio Bay. Stevie Wayne here, beaming a signal across the sea. I'll be here playing music all through the witching hour. I'm still waiting to hear from that weatherman. But in the meantime, stay here with me. Be sure to visit our sponsor, Paracinema Magazine. They're the source for all your genre movie needs. Check them out online at paracinema.net. Tell them Stevie sent you. Keep me turned on for a while, and I'll do my best to do the same for you.
The smooth sound. Fabulous 1340 KAB.
Welcome back to the Projection Booth. I'm chatting with Mike Sullivan about the Italian export Chicken Park. Mike, I kind of rely on you as being my subject matter expert when it comes to parody films. In your estimation, does Chicken Park succeed overall in parody? I think I know the answer to that. And either way, whether it does or not, why? And to you, what makes a good parody film?
It doesn't work. I know it's harder for me to like judge this because it fails in all the right ways for me as a movie. You know, it really doesn't work as like a parody movie. But like, well, I'll just say this: when you like parody movies, you're just a fan of disappointment. You like crave it, you know, because like every time you see parody movies, they don't work. None of them work. But this one, it just, I don't know, there's some, it fails, like, in every conceivable way, but, like, it's most perfect. And I shouldn't say this, because this won't be the same way for everybody, but for me, it's, like, the most perfect, rewarding way it fails. When you make, like, a parody movie, there's, like, some, like, rules you have to, like, ascribe to. Does that sound right? Ascribe to? With a good parody movie, it has to be played straight. What kills me, with, like, the late period Leslie Nielsen movies is when they just allowed him to mug and, like, be funny. Because this guy didn't have the capacity to be funny. He was just really good when he played it perfectly straight. And maybe every so often he did, like, a funny face. Cause, like, an Airplane. There's, like, the one scene where, like, he opens the egg and the bird flies and he makes, like, that face. And, I mean, that's fine. It's not like the whole thing wasn't him, like, mugging and being funny. Because, I mean, he was never really good at that. I think a good parody movie has to make its source material look more ridiculous or silly than, like, the parody itself. You know, it really has to, you know, like, just really just reveal, like, the inadequacies of the, you know, thing it was, like, you know, ripping apart. I think, like, and also, like, just like Chicken Park, like, too many parodies, they simply use their target as, like, a springboard for gags. And that in and of itself isn't bad. It just, you know, they really got to make sure those gags work and are funny. And, like, too many films, like, you know, like Friedberg and Seltzer stuff, it's just not funny. You know, it doesn't really work. And too many of the gags are, like, recognition-based. You know, and they really got to cut that out, too, with, like, the heavy amount of references. Because references in and of themselves just aren't funny. You know, but that's obvious. Everyone knows that.
And, yeah, all of their references are, like, things that are 1 month, 2 months old. There's nothing that goes farther back than that. So the shelf life of these movies, I mean, by the time they get on DVD, they're outdated.
But here's what I think is going to really work, like, in their favor, like, years down the line. I think they're going to be, like, huge. But obviously, like, ironically, you know, ironic, but I think there'll be, like, huge, like, hits down the line where people, like, be looking back at them like time capsules. Because, I mean, a lot of those jokes are just very, they're very, very time-specific and, like instantly dated. And, like, Sanjaya jokes. I mean, why would you put that in a movie? You know, that'd be dated in a week. Police Academy, like, the way people look at Police Academy, like, oh, ha-ha, these are terrible, but I like them. I think that's what's going to happen with, like, the epic movies and, like, Meet the Spartans and all that. It's just going to, like, work in its favor. But it still won't be good. No one's going to, like, retroactively look back and say, oh, these were well-written and good. They're still going to be like, oh, these are shitty, but we enjoy them, ha-ha-ha, you know, like that.
Right, it'll be like I Love the 80s or something, but they'll just watch these instead of having VH1 produce, you know, I Love March 2006.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, they won't even bother. They don't need those talking head shows. They'll just show, like, Vampires Suck. And they're like, oh, remember this week when this was kind of funny?
Kind of being the operative word in that one.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, I think with Chicken Park, it goes so far out of its way to miss all the marks of all the things that I would parody that are even just, you know, because there is so much of Chicken Park that isn't even related to Jurassic Park. But inside of the Chicken Park sequence, there are so many things that I would have parodied in the original Jurassic Park that are nowhere in that. I mean, like, you know, the Samuel L. Jackson character constantly smoking, the annoying kids. I mean, you've got Wednesday and Pugsley characters, but they're nowhere near as annoying as the, you know, the two little kids that were in Jurassic Park, especially the girl when it's like, you know, oh, this is Unix. I know this. That's the line for me. That line sums up everything that was wrong with Jurassic Park. And then, you know, the Newman character and all that kind of ridiculousness, and the old out of touch man who just is, you know, determined to keep his park going even when things are going to go wrong. You know, all those things. I'm just like, if you're going to parody something, concentrate on those. But no, they're all about the the rotisserie chicken that pops up when the one chicken tries to escape.
I don't think they actually saw Jurassic Park. I think what happened is they probably saw, like, the one sheet or maybe half of a trailer and said, all right, let's just do that. We'll do, like, a parody of that. Like, they never actually sat down to watch it, you know?
Maybe they saw Carnosaur. It's actually a very cleverly disguised parody of Carnosaur.
It's like so subtle. It's like brilliant.
Right. We're waiting for Clint Howard to show up, you know, at some point and parody his original role.
It is kind of surprising Clint Howard didn't show up. I mean, because that is something like Clint Howard would have done.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think there were very few American actors involved with this one at all, except other than maybe Dr. Eggs, you know.
It was
probably all foreign cast. You're right. It goes so far on the other side past Friedberg and Seltzer, it does kind of succeed where I feel that those films ultimately fail, because it was just so head-scratchingly, I don't know, maybe it was that it was the Italian factor to it, that it felt like it was jokes that had been translated and then retranslated back into English or something, but...
No, I hate when people say that, because they used to say about like Franco and Sicio? You used to say that about them, or they'd say, oh, well, you know, I think something was lost in translation. No, I think it was just unfunny, even in Italian. I don't think really anyone was, like, laughing even then. And when it comes to a lot of it, because look at Roberto Benigni. I mean, he's not funny in Italian or English. In this case, it was not funny either way. You know, I don't care if, like, there's a some kind of word that rhymes with egg in Italian. It's still not going to be a funny joke in America. You know, it's just, it doesn't work. I'm not going to give Chicken Park the benefit of the doubt on that one.
You don't think the Italian audiences were just rolling in the aisles when that big egg cracks open and it's an Indian who accidentally is inside of the egg rather than in Dances with Wolves?
I don't think people were rolling their aisles because the movie never actually played in theaters. It only played in theaters in Turkey. That was it. That was like the only country it played in theaters. In Italy, it made its big premiere, I think, on basic cable.
That it made its premiere in Turkey is actually funnier than the movie.
It makes sense, though. It just makes a sort of like logical sense. You're just having a double bill of like Turkish Young Frankenstein.
Whereas opposed to putting on the Ritz, they're doing breakdancing moves and things that were maybe funny in 1982 or something.
yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So I put together a list, and I asked you if you could do the same as far as what your top five parody films are, and I guess we can kind of discuss these as we go along. I mean, parody is, it's one of these loose terms, you know, because, I mean, of course, there's the dictionary definition, but then some people are like, no, that's satire, or that's just, you know, playing with a genre, or whatever it is, so... I don't know. I don't know if we want to get into these kind of heady debates here, you know.
Please, let's get like super pretentious over like these, you know, tossed off movies. Because I do.
Oh, that'd be
I do. So I have very strict guidelines of like what, you know, we'll get into that.
Okay. I mean, for me, there's definitely a level where things go from just playing with something or making a reference to something to what I refer to it as zany, you know, and to me, like the Zucker Abram Zucker films are zany. That's where I kind of, yeah. You know, I've got my bar set and I say like, you know, it's so many jokes and they're constantly, I don't know what the joke per minute ratio is in these films, but they're just constantly coming at you so that if, you know, 20% of them fail, it still overall is very funny to me.
Yeah.
You know, and I would say in some of the movies that they've done, you know, you're getting pretty low on that scale, you know, like Hot Shots Part Deux or, anything that they've done in the last like 10 years or something. Though I kind of liked Scary Movie 3, was it, that they did? That one of them did?
Yeah, that was.
And then.
Yeah.
I didn't mind that one, and then, because again, I thought that they did kind of a good job mixing some of the parody things that they were doing by mixing The Sixth Sense with the, War of the Worlds, those kind of things.
Yeah.
I don't know. That kind of worked for me. And I liked Basketball, but I kind of liked that mix of the ZAZ style with the South Park style, but again, I'm getting off. Go ahead.
I don't really count Basketball as like a parody movie because it's not really. I know it's like making fun of sports movies, but like the central premise is like so abstract, like the whole like, you know, basketball thing that I don't, even though like they were involved and had like elements of those, I don't think it's like crazy or like like anarchic enough to like qualify as a parody movie. I actually like Basketball, but I don't, you know, consider it like a parody movie.
Yeah, there's nothing that is specifically parodying. And as far as like the ZAZ style jokes, those really come through for me with the whole relationship of Robert Vaughn and Jenny McCarthy, that whole, you know, come over and lay some carpet and those kind of things, you know, clean my pipes, all those. Those remind me more of the ZAZ jokes than the rest of it, and the rest of it feels much more like the Stone Parker kind of stuff.
I think that's fair. Yeah, I think that's true. Yeah, I mean, that's probably why, because it doesn't have, like, that sort of, like, the similar gag frequency. It's like, there's a, like, I just call it Zazz. I call it, like, Zazz. Like, the Zazz movies.
Right. And then I haven't seen the one, the anti-Michael Moore. What's it called? Like, the
An American Carol. Yeah, I saw it in theaters when it came out. Yeah, that's a rough one. Because it's all, it's all, like, right-wing polemic. I mean, there's, and, like, all the gags are, like, you know, like very, like, arch-conservative gags. Like, you know, all universities are liberal indoctrination camps, and they do, like, a song about that. You know, it's just, it's really rough. They really go after Michael Moore in this, like, really obvious, stupid way. Like, ha, 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 he's fat. You know, like, that kind of, it's like that kind of thing. Like, he likes to eat. Ha, 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 ha. You know, it's really, it's bad. It's just bad.
Right.
I don't even own it. And I own, like, all, like, Freeburg and Seltzer's output, and I don't own an American Carol.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's saying something.
Oh, yeah.
Wowee. Yeah, I didn't go for that one yet. I haven't had the courage to do that one just because I think it would make me so mad compared to other stuff. I mean, I actually tolerate the Freeburg and Seltzer stuff just because I kind of have to see just how awful they are. So there's this morbid curiosity whenever one of their new films comes out.
They've actually gotten better. I mean, to the point where they're mediocre, you know, like not where they're good, but they've actually, because vampires suck. They don't do that, like, you know how, like, an epic movie and, like, Meet the Spartans are constantly, like, you know, getting away from the plot and, like, doing, like, you know, shoehorning in, like, you know, parodies that don't really work. Like,
right.
Vampires suck, you know, it's actually pretty, like, a straightforward parody, like, the, you know, Twilight movies, but it's still, you know, it's still not good. You know, I still wish someone else would have made fun of Twilight, because it's, you know, I wish someone good would have came in to make fun of that, because, you know, it's really a great target. But, no, they're getting better. They'll never be good, but they do get, like, gradually better, though. I give them that much. I think I'm the only, like, Freeburg and Seltzer apologist.
Yeah, I did download the riff tracks for Twilight, and I found that to be very funny.
Oh, yeah.
And I think that's probably the best way that you can do it, is more of a direct, you know, commentary on just how awful those movies are.
Yeah.
I mean, I think I've even watched, like, two or three of those now, just, you know, with the riff tracks on, because it's like, I don't think I could ever, even with the riff tracks on, it's kind of painful to sit through those.
Oh, yeah, I can imagine. Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so getting to my top five list.
Yes.
So, and I am absolutely fine if you disagree with any of these, even if you think that they're not parody films. So I will, you know, I concede that.
Okay.
So what I used as my measuring stick on this one was, I went to the source of all human knowledge, Wikipedia, got this list of parodies from the 1900s on, and these were the five that jumped out at me as what I would consider my favorites. And a lot of these are older ones, I've noticed, because I guess just because if I grew up with these, I enjoyed them more. But of course, the first two are going to go right against that and contradict what I just said. So my number five is Shaun of the Dead. I love this film, and I love the way that it was put together. I love the, again, the frequency of the jokes.
Yeah.
I think are comes fast and furious. I love the montages that they do when they're, like, flipping through TV channels, and it's, you know, taking words from different shows and kind of putting together sentences that are really describing what's going on, but yet the characters are too dumb to realize what's going on.
Yeah, that one I don't see as a parody movie. I just see it more as a horror comedy. That doesn't like scream parody to me.
So my number four, again, might be controversial, but I'm not sure, which is Black Dynamite. I actually watch Black Dynamite in 10-minute chunks because I kept being afraid that something bad was going to happen and that it would suddenly turn from this really great movie that felt like it was made for me into something stupid, you know? I mean, I guess if I was going to go really, you know, strict parody kind of stuff, I would say, I'm going to get you, sucker. But Black Dynamite really just it really hit me just the right way with everything. And the way that they mixed in some of the dialogue from the older films and would make references to the older films without being that kind of overt thing. You know, there was no point where they really turned to the camera and did that kind of knowing wink, that Leslie Nielsen moment you were talking about earlier. But this one was just so subtle and just kept it going throughout the entire film. I mean, I really enjoyed that.
I love Black Dynamite too. There's like so much in that I love. I like the final, spoiler alert, anyone just like, you know, block your ears or whatever. I love the final reveal with Nixon. I love that.
Oh yeah.
And I love the Captain Kangaroo cameo. And I love that the one pimp is called Chocolate Giddy Up. And I love the way he says the name, like Chocolate Giddy Up. I love that. But here's the thing. I consider it more like a Mel Brooks movie that's actually funny. Like, that's actually a smart, good, like, Mel Brooks take on, like, the blaxploitation genre. You know, like, but I don't really think of it like a Zazz-style, like, parody movie. And, like, that's, like, I have tunnel vision with that. Like, anything that's, like, a parody movie has to be, like, almost, like, either, like, a Zazz movie or a Zazz clone. So, with, like, Black Dynamite, I see that more as, like, sort of, like, genre tweaking rather than, like, a parody movie.
Now, I'm going to take issue with what you said about Mel Brooks, because I will agree that he hasn't made a good movie in, like, 30 years, but...
I don't like Mel Brooks. Here's what I like about Mel. I like the producers and Young Frankenstein and everything else I just hate.
Really? Even Blazing Saddles?
Blazing Saddles does not work for me.
Wow.
Because, like, it's like Harvey Korman heavy, and it's like Mel... But, like, whenever Mel Brooks is in front of the camera, you lost me. He's, like, the most obnoxious comedic performer. And I think he's... I swear he's the biggest hack. And I think the only person that was ever good on your shows is Woody Allen and maybe Neil Simon. Like, everyone else is like this really terrible, like, borscht belt hack in the writer's room. I've been wanting to say this for years. I do not like Mel Brooks. I hate Mel Brooks.
Wow.
I do, yeah.
You know, what you were saying about him, about, you know, his performances in front of the camera and his directing style kind of reminds me of Lloyd Kaufman a little bit.
Yeah, you're right. I never thought of it. That's a great comparison. Yeah. I can see that totally.
Yeah, I could see Lloyd doing the governor character pretty darn easily. A little bit of controversy with my number 5 and number 4. Number 3, I think, is going to fit in that sweet spot, which is Top Secret.
Yes. Oh, absolutely Top Secret. Yeah.
I still quote from this movie all the time, even when it's completely inappropriate to do so. But, yeah, I really enjoy this one. I think it kind of gets, you know, swept under the carpet a little bit as far as looking at other Zaz films. You know, Hot Shots is always lauded, and, of course, Airplane. Yeah. But Top Secret just really hits the marks for me. And, I think it's one of Val Kilmer's best films.
Val Kilmer really was made for comedy. He really should have did more comedies. He really has that knack. And here's something weird. The Zazz guys weren't happy with Top Secret and are still kind of embarrassed by it, which I think is weird because I think in some ways it's actually better than Airplane.
Mm.
You know, I think it's one of their strongest comedies. I think, like, outside of, like, because they did, like, 3 really great things. They did Airplane, obviously, and then the Police Squad, which is great.
Oh,
I think that's
like
the best like Leslie Nielsen comedic performance, where he just fucking nails it, you know.
Yeah.
And Top Secret, which is, I mean, they did like 3, and as far as I'm concerned, they can make as many American Carols as they want. They can make Scary Movie like 5 through 12, you know. They made these 3 things, they've got a pass with me, because I mean those are just such like pure great like comedy efforts. They're just amazing.
Yeah, it's funny. I was just having this conversation the other day with a friend of mine. We were talking about Airplane, and I was talking about how great Police Squad was. And then I wasn't really that happy with the Naked Gun films, just because so much of it was recycled from Police Squad. And I think that humor works in half-hour increments so well.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it was like Fistful of Chopsticks. You know, if Fistful of Chopsticks had been an hour and a half, I don't think it would have worked, even though they Call Me Bruce does work, you know, nothing to do with those guys. But
I think the smartest thing those guys did was, if you listen to the commentaries for like the Police Squad series, they actually hired guys that had experience, not in comedy, but like in, you know, like shows like Cannon, you know, and Barnaby Jones. They were like action movie directors who they brought in just so they can get them to get everyone to like play completely straight. And I think that was like such a smart, brilliant idea.
Oh yeah.
With Police Squad. Yeah.
So I know that you just said that ZAZ were not happy with Top Secret. And then I talked to the director of my number two pick, Alfred Soul, and he wasn't happy with his film either. But I love Pandemonium. I just thought that they did everything right in that movie. And I was rewatching it for that article, and it still makes me laugh. There are still lines in there, and there's still stuff that I'm like quoting from it as I'm watching it. I'm like, oh my God, I didn't remember that I knew this line, but really worked for me. I don't know. What, you must have seen Pandemonium, so what are your thoughts on it?
When I discovered that movie, it was like years before the internet. So this was really hard to find. I wound up paying for like a new copy of that for about like $50. Because you know, like VHS, like that, when they would sell them like video stores.
Oh, yeah, before they, when they weren't sell through copies.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, like I had to buy, I actually had to buy it from like this distributor for like $50. And it was like the MGM, like the big, because that's all that I think it was ever released on.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, like the cinematography in that is like really strong. Like the set design, it's like really weird. Like when they go in like that morgue, mm-hmm. It was like, and the cast in it. I mean, just the craziest cast. Like, you know, Pee Wee Herman's in it. And I think the woman who plays Miss Yvonne shows up as like an Asian stewardess, you know, and like Tommy Smothers. It's just weird. It made my top 10. It didn't make my top 5, but it made my top 10. And that is like a really, it's kind of, I guess it has a cult following, but for some reason it's just swept under the carpet. You know, I don't even think it's even on one of those MGM, like those, like, you know, like, you know what I mean? Like those Warner Archives type things. Like
right.
They got an MGM one now. I don't know why that's not on there. You know, it's like that, like the ready made like niche thing. You know, I don't know why it's, but it has a following, you know, and I don't know. It's weird how like that's swept under the carpet.
And then my number one really was a no-brainer. I mean, we're talking parody films, so I had to go for the granddaddy for me, which is Airplane. Still holds up, still completely quotable. And so many of these films just kind of, you know, owe their lifeblood to Airplane. Without that, I don't think Friedberg would have ever worked. So there's good and bad, I guess, about Airplane.
Airplane was like my number one too, and I think in a lot of ways, like Airplane just didn't like, you know, jumpstart like the parody genre. I think it just sort of like jumpstarted, you know, like modern comedy in a lot of ways. I mean, like a lot of things like owe a debt to like The Simpsons, you know, owes a debt to like the Airplane, you know, like Mad Magazine, where it like jumpstarted like a whole sort of brand of comedy that's just sort of like co-opted. And, like, now everyone uses, like, sort of some part of it. And I think it's a very important film.
I was listening to the audio commentary recently and listening to them talk about Robert Stack, and that when they wanted Stack to deliver his lines, he was just reading them as he would read them, and they finally realized that it wasn't working, that they wanted him to read his lines as John Biner would read Robert Stack.
Doing the character of Robert Stack.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. So it was Robert Stack imitating John Biner imitating Robert Stack.
What I love about that is like he like read with like Lloyd Bridges.
Uh-huh.
And he didn't get it. Like Robert Stack just didn't get like the beats of the film and like how you're supposed to do it. And I think Lloyd Bridges said this, and this is so great. He goes, "You don't understand, Robert. We're the jokes."
Right. All right, so Mike Sullivan, what is your top 5 parody films?
You know, being that, you know, I'm like the parody guy, I had to like go like a little weird with some of these.
Okay.
So just to be show-offy,
these,
you know.
Like super obscure German parodies from the 1912s.
So I'm going to start out with something weird, Gums.
Gums, oh, the Jaws parody?
Well, first of all, there's a lot of like, there's actually, obviously, you know, it's a porno movie.
Mm-hmm.
Let's just be adults here and come out and say this is the porno version of Jaws. It's actually very funny. There's like parts of it that surprise me how funny it is. Like Brother Theodore shows up as the Clint character, but for some reason he's in like a Nazi SS uniform. I don't know why. There's a part at the end where like, I don't know why this happened either. The cat turns into puppets. And there's a line in it that I love, because it sounds like it could have been a Johnny Ryan comic, but there's a reporter in the movie, and he goes, "This will make Watergate look like a limp prick," and he says it like really angry. It's very funny, and that was number 5 there on my list. Number 4 was Walk Hard: The Dewey Cox Story.
Oh, nice one, yeah.
I wish that movie didn't fail, because, I mean, it showed that, like, there can be, like, smart, like, well-constructed parody movies.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, that one just died at the box office and shouldn't have.
No, it shouldn't have, because, yeah, I watched that one on video. God, yeah, it had me rolling. There were so many good jokes in that.
like even the extended version still works. You know, usually when they do like the extended, it's like really like self-indulgent, but there's still like a lot of good material on the extended version. And I just, that's one I thought would have had a cult following by now, but apparently it just hasn't really developed, and it's a shame.
I love his whole thing of when he talks to people that are supposed to be somebody else, you know, and it's like, that's right, John Lennon.
My favorite was the Frankie Muniz when he was like Buddy Holly. That was my favorite because it was like the least likely person to play the character. All those were great. Yeah.
And I saw that one before I saw the Johnny Cash movie, so I really didn't get a lot of the jokes. They were still funny, but then retroactively, it was funnier when I saw the Johnny Cash movie, especially the scene where they're playing with the machetes and stuff in the barn.
They really took the source material and they really just made like ridiculous. And, right. And the soundtrack's really good, too. I have the CD.
Oh, yeah.
I love the soundtrack, the Walk Hard.
It elevates the parody because not only do you get the funny movie, but then the songs all add to it. And the songs are great songs, but then the lyrics to them just add this whole other level of comedy to it. You know, Let's Do It is terrific.
Oh, yeah.
And
number three, this might cause a bit of a stir and debate. Wet Hot American Summer.
I haven't seen it yet.
Oh, you haven't?
No, it's on my to-watch list, and it's on Netflix Instant Queue right now, but I have yet to actually sit down and do it, because that one, I don't know where I was when that movie came out, because it suddenly seemed like people were talking about it, and I'm like, I've never heard of this film before. What is this thing? Is this one of these, you know, many American Pie clones, or what is this thing? So
it's like a parody of it's a smarter parody of like, you know, Meatballs and like, you know, like the summer camp movies of like the 80s, early 80s. What I like about it is it's, you know, it's like very like weird. There's very like it's like the modern like evolution of like the Zsasz movies, where it's just like there's really smart humor, there's like stupid humor. There's like great absurdism in it. And David Wayne went on to direct episodes of Children's Hospital, and you can see that further evolvement of like the Zsasz style humor, where it's getting like smarter and weirder, and you could see it happening. And I don't know if these guys would want to say what they're doing is like parody stuff, but it is like, it's like smart parody stuff.
What's your number two, sir?
Top Secret. That's my number two.
Oh, nice. We're
yep.
in sync.
Yeah.
Is your number one Airplane as well?
That's right. Point number one. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, it doesn't get better than Airplane, really.
I get the honorable mention, Police Squad. You know, I don't know.
All right, so we're going to take a break, and we will be back after a preview from next week's episode.
Everyone gets a number at birth. Your number comes up. They know where you live. They come in the night.
We're here to help you.
Bearing gifts.
You can't do this.
Now all you have to do is stay alive.
It's kill or be killed.
I'm going to win.
Meet the contenders. Dawn, Jeff, Connie, Lindsay, Tony, Franklin.
Just watch your back, because Tony's coming.
One will win.
I'm a survivor.
The rest will die.
What happened?
Series 7.
Just thought I'd look these people up, you know, psych them out.
The highest rated series in television history.
I hate you!
Just got too big for your living room.
There's a bomb in your house, and it's going to blow in about 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
They're real people.
I'm going to get you, Connie!
In real danger, in a fight for their lives.
Can you shut that off, please?
There's not enough light.
Yeah, well, why don't you go first, then? All right, now I can't see anything.
It's too hot for TV.
Innocent people are going to get hurt here.
And it's coming to a theater near you.
That means you assholes!
Oh my God, they're here! Let them in! Please, let them in!
Seriously.
The game is real.
I saw you on TV. I love you.
Welcome back. That was a preview from next week's film, Series 7, The Contenders. I'll be joined in the projection booth by Rob St. Mary. His number is up. That's all the time we have for this week. I want to thank you again, Mike, for coming on the show. Now, I know you write for a ton of publications, Shock Cinema, Cashiers to Cinema, Paracinema. Tell the listeners about some of the stuff you've penned recently for those and or other publications.
In like the latest issue of Cashiers to Cinema, I interviewed Adam Resnick, who was a best known for like writing and directing Cabin Boy, and he also was one of the co-creators on Get a Life, and that's a pretty interesting interview if you want to check that out. And Cashews of Cinemart, I have like some reviews in a new issue of like Shock Cinema, and I should be in probably the upcoming issue of Cinemasur, although I don't know about that. Sometimes I'm in it and I'm not, and I don't know. It's like, it's weird. I don't know how that works, but I might be in the next issue of Cinemasur. Hopefully I don't piss off Robin Bougie with this if he hears it. but yeah, I'm like all over the place. So, you know, sometimes, you know, just check it out. You know, just pick some up randomly. Maybe I'm in it. I don't know. You know,
I did love your article in the, not the last issue, but the issue before that of Paracinema, of the unmade parody films, which is just absolutely fascinating.
Yeah, you know, I think in some ways, like, my love of parody is, like, sort of infecting you, because it seems like a lot of the new stuff you're doing is, like, parody-related, and that makes me happy. It brings joy inside that someone has, like, the same problems I have now, where they have to go out and see, like, the latest Friedberg and Seltzer movies, you know, just, like, an impulse.
I haven't gone to see them at the theater, so
yeah.
I'm not quite to your level yet, or your depths, I should say. So
yeah.
your depths of depravity. So,
sickness.
But yeah, I guess it was because we had done Wacko on the show months ago, Justin and I, and got to talking about different horror parodies, and that's what kind of spurred the horror parody article. And then it just happened that I got a list of movies that were being covered for a upcoming Bear Manor Media project, and
excited
all
about
the
that,
films.
By the way, really excited about that.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
I'm very excited about it too. I'm really happy with the way this thing turned out. But yeah, on the list was Airplane 2, and since I was in parody mode, I'm just like, all right, let's keep going. So
yeah
Airplane 2, not 100% successful, but I actually have found a lot of good things about it while I've, you know, watched it 50, 60 times over the last few months.
Yeah. How many times did you sit through Chicken Park, by the way?
Probably about 3 or 4 times. Yeah.
Wow, that's shocking. I thought maybe he did it twice. I'm shocked he did it that many times. That couldn't have been easy. That could not have been easy.
It wasn't easy at all. It was tough. I mean, I will say that I probably watched that opening probably 10 or 15 times just as I was trying to get into it. And then also, you know, the awesome song. You can't really beat that song. So that one is on, constant rotation on my iPod now. So just
do you think they just made that song up as they went along? I mean, it
kind of felt like it.
Yeah, because it just sounds like they just, like, he was just, like, looking at objects or things, like, around the room when he was, like, you know, performing it. He's like, well, they're like, many of you are close friends of ours. Chicken Park, come on. It's like, it doesn't make any sense.
But, you know, it rhymes, and so.
There you go. Yeah, that's always a sign of a good song. It rhymes, yeah.
It's got that awesome instrumentation to it, so.
It is cat. You know, I like that song, too. What am I saying? I like that song. Yeah.
I wouldn't be surprised if that was on your iPod as well. So
I tried to put the movie on my iPod, and I couldn't do it. Wouldn't go on there for whatever reason. I actually tried to do that.
It was rejected.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks again, Mike. I really appreciate you being on the show.
Yeah, I really enjoyed being here, and I hope I hope I could come back and do some more stuff. This work.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Because I have a feeling this is probably going to be the lowest rated episode of a production booth.
It might surprise us both and be the highest. You never know.
That's
get that Italian following. You know.
It could be. Yeah.
Jerry Kyle is going to post this up on his Facebook page, and the rest is history.
Yeah, those 33 people, they'll really latch onto it.
All right. I also want to thank everybody else for listening to the show, listening to us kind of ramble on pointlessly, but I had a good time. So catch more of the Projection Booth over at iTunes, Stitcher, or via the website at projection-booth.com.
What you want to hear? All the funky in the house. Chicken Park, Chicken Park. What you want to hear? All the funky in the house. The funky Chicken Park.
Come on, come on.
We're the Chicken Park, yes, 7 foot tall. 240 pounds and we're made to crawl. We're here in the park, just in case you didn't know. We want to make sure that you have a good crawl. You know what we do to people ain't fine. Chicken Park is what we say. Chicken Park will scream all day. Many of you are close.
stand by for the most extraordinary chain of events ever swept up into high adventure.
Hey, Larry, where's the forklift?
Forklift! It's over there for the baggage loader.
Airplane. Airplane is drama.
This is Dr. Brody at the Mayo Clinic. There's a passenger on your Chicago flight 209, or a little girl named Lisa Davis, en route to Minneapolis. She's scheduled for a heart transplant. I want you to make sure that she's kept in a reclined position and that a continuous watch is kept on her IV.
Airplane is action. Airplane is romance.
I love you, Elaine.
I love you.
Airplane is music.
There is only one river. There is only one sea.
Airplane is dancing. Never has the screen been so big.
You ever been in a cockpit before?
No, sir, I've never been up in a plane before.
Peter Graves.
You ever seen a grown man naked?
Kareem Abdul-Jabbar.
My name is Roger Murdoch. I'm an airline pilot.
Leslie Nielsen.
This woman has to be gotten to a hospital.
A hospital? What is it?
It's a big building with patients, but that's not important right now.
Lloyd Bridges.
Johnny, what can you make out of this? This? Well, I can make a hat. Or a brooch. A pterodactyl. Could keep your uncle.
Robert Stack.
All right, Steve, let's face a few facts.
And we hope you enjoy the rest of your flight.
Julie Haggerty.
By the way, is there anyone on board who knows how to fly a plane?
Can you fly this plane and land it?
Robert Hayes.
Surely you can't be serious.
I am serious. And don't call me Shirley.
I've got to get out of here.
Please, let me handle this. Calm down now. Get back to your seat. I'll take care of this. Calm down. Get a hold of yourself.
Don't
be
one
on
the phone. Everything's been pulled.
Sister, please, now handle this.
Calm down.
Mayday. Mayday.
The most incredible adventure the screen has ever created.
He's coming right at us!
The big news is... Airplane.